Happy birthday to us. Woo! Happy birthday to us. Woo! Happy birthday, what the history.
Yay! What is that? And happy birthday to us.
Hooray!
Yay! Yay! It's our birthday. It's our birthday. It's our birthday.
It is. It is.
And it is for real.
Yeah.
Not for play.
We are celebrating the 1 year anniversary of What the History's official launch. Woo!
Yay! If I had those popping things, I'd be popping them by now.
Yeah. But I think we'll talk more in the actual podcast part itself. This is our little wee bit at the start.
Yay!
And now, what the... Hello and welcome to this very special What the History. It's 1 year since we officially launched the podcast. It is unbelievable.
We've made it this far.
Yeah, steady growth, just generally putting it out there. And so thank you to everyone who's listened from the start. Thank you to everyone who's come along for the ride during.
Yes.
Thank you if this is your first episode.
Thank you for listening. And thank you for joining us on our wonderful journeys through history. It's like Bill and Ted's, isn't it? We are not sponsored by Bill and Ted's or Warner Movies or whoever it was.
But again,
it is like it.
If anyone wants to sponsor us, we'll happily take anyone's money.
Yes, we would have to speak to our lawyers on that.
Lawyers?
Okay.
So... in this episode, we are going to do something a little bit different to celebrate.
Mm-hmm.
You see, we've put together a big list of possible topics, and not all of them have enough sources. Not all of them have enough information out there to really build an episode on. So we thought we'd get some of them off our list with a little bit of a nibble episode.
Nibbles, because we are the buffet of history, short snippets of goodness.
Tasty treats.
And you didn't introduce yourself.
Surely I'm allowed to do that once in the 1 year. I got too excited about the anniversary.
You did.
I'm getting there.
Bull.
I am. Anyway, I'm Trevor Holland.
And I'm Susie Holland. Hey!
And so with these nibbles, we're not saying we will never get an episode out of these. We're still going to keep that option open as should more information come to light. But we thought it'd be a nice, fun way to just tick off a few topics that we haven't been able to do much with at this
because
point.
Because there's either not enough information or not enough to do a whole podcast on.
Considering how brief some of our stories have been,
that's saying something. This is like if you'd only found one source or no sources but have heard of them in the past.
Indeed.
Like one of Trevor's stories, which... he will introduce a bit later on in this episode.
I will indeed. Now, I think I've got a few extra nibbles, so I think I might break with tradition and go first this time.
Yes, you can go first. I will let you.
And we shall alternate back and forth. Don't worry, Susie's going to balance it out at the other end of the podcast with a little extra bit that we are not talking about just yet. Shh.
What was that then? Have I forgotten something? What? He whispered it and I didn't...
I didn't want the microphone to pick it up.
Oh. Okay. I've obviously forgotten something along the way.
It's okay. I'm sure you
I lead a very busy life, people.
So, let's start with these nibbles, these appetizers, these tasty mini bits and pieces.
Get your knives and forks and your bibs ready.
It's more like finger food, really. So, first up.
Oh, my mind went to the gutter.
First up.
Go.
In the 1960s, there were a number of plane hijackings in the US, and a lot of thought was put towards a solution. One idea that was put forward used the following logic. Since the hijacker was pretty much reliant on the pilots to get the plane to their intended destination, then why not trick them by constructing a fake Cuban airport in Florida? What the hell? So this way a pilot could fly out over the Gulf of Mexico before coming into land at a location that looked just like Cuba to fool those pesky hijackers. The plan never really got off the ground, though. No
literally.
Pun intended there. Not only was the cost too high, The administrator of the Federal Aviation Administration wrote at the time, quote, using a fake airport would work once, and that's all. End quote. So, first nibble. There was a plan to build a fake airport in Florida to confuse hijackers. What the history?
Oh, God. I'm just going to be laughing all the way through this.
Oh, they're great.
Of course. Okay, my first little nibble is, according to the one source I was able to find, and I'm a researcher by trade. This is what I do. And when I can only find one thing, well, at least I tried. Okay, so according to the one source I was able to find, while building the Great Pyramid of Cheops circa 1580 BC, the workers weren't getting their rations of garlic because they really love garlic and it's very good for flavouring of food and also health benefits as well. So when they didn't get their rations of garlic, they just simply put their tools down and stopped work. According to the Greek writer Herodotus, Cheops was not a very nice man and he, and I quote, brought the people to utter misery. This is apparently the first time, this is apparently the first time anyone had ever went on strike while working. A second strike apparently occurred during the reign of Ramesses III, circa 1152, where the artisans working in Ramesses III's tomb weren't receiving the correct treatment, maybe slaves and things, and nourishment, including staples of oil for their skin so it didn't dry out in the sun, and flour so they can make bread. So they simply didn't go to work. And they pleaded with their vizier to speak to Ramesses, and the oil and flour magically reappeared. And the workers went back to work the next day. So that's the pyramid builder's strike. Tools down!
Yep. Yep, it's just something you would not imagine.
Oh, well, I could imagine it. I'm surprised there isn't more evidence of this. I'm surprised that was the earliest they could find in the, you know, thing that I found.
Again, we're not enough sources to really justify a full episode, even though that would be a great one. I do hope more turns up.
Well, yeah. If there is anyone out there that has got some evidence of this, please let us know.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, sorry, that's all right. That's all right. Now, my next little nibble is from personal recollection. Unfortunately, when it comes to internet-based archival of advertisements that were on television during my childhood, the general internet is a little lacking. Mm-hmm. I can promise you I'm not the only one who remembers this ad, by the way. Mm-mm, okay,
I remember this ad.
So, travel agency ads have been around for ages. And should they find a song with a snippet of lyrics that can be used to make a nice jingle, then so much the better for them. The ad I am referring to had the refrain, quote, jet boy, jet girl, gonna take you round the world, end quote, complete with an animated plane flying around an animated globe to emphasize the point.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds all good, doesn't it?
Yep. Sounds great so far.
It wasn't until much later that I came across the original song of Jet Boy, Jet Girl by Alton Motello, which was released in 1978, only to discover it is about a 15-year-old boy who descends into a homicidal rage after seeing his gay lover out with a girl. Not really sure if that's the image the advertisers were going for.
No.
I will link to the song in the references. I will just put in a quick disclaimer now, since the lyrics are pretty explicit.
Yeah, and it's also the tune of another song that was released a little bit later on, so we'll leave you to listen to that, and
Yes, indeed.
And check it out.
Yes,
You'll know it. It's one of those songs that you will never forget, and it stays in your head forever. But anyway.
Very true. Very true. It's in my head now.
Yeah, me too. Oh, no, don't hum it. Okay. Okay, my next little nibble, num-num-nums. In Louisiana, in the USA, it's illegal to consume blood. Hey, didn't know that one, did you? Yes, you heard right. One can't go to Louisiana and consume the blood of a human or animal. And just for good measure, you can't eat or drink human or animal waste. Now, this, for me, begs the question, what the hell happened in Louisiana that made it law not to do these things? So, yeah, check it out. It's under Ritualistic Acts, under Revised Statutes 2011, and in Section A, it states, and I quote, the legislator legislature? Yeah.
That sounds good.
Yeah, legislature hereby finds that this enactment is necessary for the immediate preservation of the public peace, health, morals, safety, and welfare, and for the support of state government and its existing public institutions, end quote. Section B, as a follow-on, is, for purposes of this subsection, ritualistic acts, and that's in air quotes, means those acts undertaken as part of a ceremony, rite, initiation, observance, performance, or practice that result in, or are intended to result in, A, the mutilation, dismemberment, torture, abuse, or sacrifice of animals, and B, the ingestion of human or animal blood or human or animal waste. Now, this is a state that has the following cities: New Orleans, Lafayette, and Baton Rouge, places which people associate with voodoo and the supernatural. So I guess that's why they made it illegal. Oh, dear. As an aside, sodomy, even consensual, is illegal in Louisiana, calling it a, and I quote again, crime against nature, end quote. Now that's a whopper.
Yeah, it still would be fascinating to find out exactly what put that on the books.
I think I'm too scared to walk.
True.
I mean, because there's voodoo practices that involve the sacrificing of a chicken or an animal, or and so you can't do that in that state.
But then again, with New Orleans, that did feature in our first Halloween podcast. Yes,
so it was illegal to do what she did.
Funny that.
Yeah, it's funny that murder is illegal as well.
Yeah. If you want to know more about that, yes. I won't go into details, but if you go to Halloween. What the Halloween episode from last year,
that still leaves a bad taste in my mouth, that episode. My lord. Not mine. Mine was great. It was Fisher's Ghost. So of Campbelltown, so it was great. But Trevor's, okay, I digress again.
That's all right. Now, Australian listeners would be familiar with the ongoing saga of internet infrastructure in Australia, known as the National Broadband Network, or NBN for short, involving whether or not all copper wires should be replaced with fibre optic cables. What you may not know is that a similar battle occurred in Australian Parliament way back in 1910. And it's amazing how similar some of the comments at the time were to the arguments of more recent times. If you look back at the minutes for the Australian House of Representatives dated 23rd of November 1910, you will find a heated debate over the plan to upgrade the iron wire network to copper.
Oh dear.
When Thomas Brown MP declared that extra cost for copper was fine as, quote, copper is used for greater efficiency, end quote, James Matthews MP responded with statements including, quote, some of the iron wire lines have been used for 30 years and give as good as results now as copper wire lines. Last year, an iron wire line put up when I was a boy still gave satisfactory results. Although for a good part of its length, it ran parallel with the railway line and was exposed to the smoke of locomotives, which is prejudicial to its life.
That was end quote. Really well done. Oh, tough.
And yes, like I said, similar, for those not aware, the arguments about upgrading from copper to fibre optic is, well, copper's been good enough for now, is a very common refrain if you go back through some of the more recent stuff. So now I need a term similar to deja vu, which describes the feeling of reading something from the past that sounds a lot like something you heard very recently.
I could say deja vu here. Feeling that you've heard the same caca before.
That's a pretty good one. Yeah, but this is like poo. This is like I've heard it and then I found out it was said before over 100 years ago.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, I won't get political.
No, not at all.
Much.
No.
Moving on.
Podcast, we can be political.
Moving on.
Okay, now my next little tidbit. Now, this is a story about the US Secret Service hid the White House doorbell from President Coolidge. Yeah. I love this story. Now, everyone, why would this happen? Well, apparently the president had a thing for pranking his Secret Service agents by crying wolf. Usually the bell would be rung in an emergency, i.e. the president was in big trouble, but with this guy, the bell would be rung, the agents would race to the porch to find the 30th president of the USA giggling like a naughty schoolboy behind a pillar. The agents then hid the doorbell, but before it was removed permanently, he would ring the doorbell and then bolt, a bit like knock and run presidential style. President Coolidge did some further pranking when he would buzz for the agents in the Oval Office, then hide and watch the agents freaking out that the prankster president was missing on their watch. Oh, what the President Coolidge. What the naughty, naughty boy.
I think I'd vote for a president like that.
He's a cheeky bugger.
He is. He is.
I'm not really sure about what his policies were or what he did.
But he knew how to have a good time.
He had a good time. I wouldn't say that's the same of his poor people that were looking after him. They're probably frustrated.
Now, my next one is rather just another bit of Australian history, which I think is always good when we get that in there.
You're doing well.
So censorship has always been a contentious topic, and some decisions can get a bit what the. Back in the 1960s, well, late 50s, into the 60s, raunchier books were considered too hot for the general public, and many titles got locked away by the censor. A particularly notorious title was Lady Chatterley's Lover by D.H. Lawrence. Yes, it got banned in Australia and the United Kingdom, and eventually an appeal made its way to the UK courts to get the ban lifted. But that is not what this little nibble is about. In 1961, a book called The Trial of Lady Chatterley, about the banning and the court case, made its way to Australian shores. It contained excerpts from the infamous book and was promptly banned by the Australian government. So that's right, a book about the banning of Lady Chatterley's Lover in Australia got banned in Australia. In a strange parallel to its subject, the ban was appealed, but it took 4 years before the book about the banning of Lady Chatterley's Lover could join it on store bookshelves. Even then, you could still have been prosecuted in the state of Victoria for having a copy of the book. Wow.
I didn't think Victorians were that prudish. I mean, the state of Victoria.
We are talking the mid-60s here, so who knows?
No, I thought Queensland was more up there. Ooh, bad.
Yes, well.
Yeah, still there.
And I've got one more before we move on to the next section.
I was slack and forgot that I had to do four. Is that what I forgot? Is that what you were whispering about?
No, it didn't matter how many we did. We're just selecting a selection.
There's a few.
There were.
I can't remember off the top of my head other ones, but oh my goodness.
So anyway, I'll finish off our nibbles.
Yes.
This great little story that I came across just scrolling through Facebook one day. It dates back to 1750 BCE from ancient Babylon and is the earliest known example of a complaint letter. Found in amongst the belongings of a merchant named Ian Nasser, I assume that's how it's pronounced, it comes from a disgruntled customer named Nani and includes great comments such as, "When you came, you said to me as follows, 'I will give Gimli Sin when he comes.'" I probably shouldn't use the same politician voice, should I?
No, you shouldn't.
Too late now.
Oh, dear.
"I will give Gimli Sin when he comes, fine quality copper and ingots. You left then, but you did not do what you promised me. You put ingots, which were not good, before my messenger and said, 'If you want them, take them. Take them. If you do not want to take them, go away.'" End quote. There is also, quote, "What do you take me for that you treat somebody like me with such contempt?" End quote. And let's not forget this one. Quote, "Take cognizance that from now on I will not accept here any copper from you that is not of fine quality. I shall, from now on, select and take the ingots individually in my own yard, and I shall exercise against you my right of rejection because you have treated me with contempt." End quote. And believe me, this is only a small section of the letter. Now, despite the fact that it's the earliest known complaint letter, but what's really up there is that this was chiseled into a clay tablet and only very well-stored tablets have survived over the centuries. So it makes me wonder about Ian Assir, as he not only kept the letter, he also filed it away for safekeeping.
Oh, bless his little heart.
What the indeed.
Dear, oh dear.
So there you go. There's just a little sampling of nibbles that we couldn't make full episodes out of. But I think really what we also should do is have a little look back over the past year. And
we should.
Perhaps look at what some of our favourite stories over the past 12 months have been. So, Susie,
so you guys can go and check it out after this as well if you missed any episodes, because these are my favourites. These are the ones that Trev did that I absolutely loved. Okay, first one, I can't go past Badgering History. That was coupled with my Disco Inferno one. That was done last year? I can't remember. Go back and check them out.
Yes.
Now... The way Trevor described it was like a perfect match for badgers. It's like, behind door number one, we have badger number one. And here's badger number two. It's just, oh, I was in stitches. It was hilarious. Next one is Wonder Whose Origin This Is. And I love origin stories. And Wonder Woman is iconic. So this is what the story is about, the origin of Wonder Woman. She got her origins with a non-monogamous triad, and that makes me very proud.
Especially at the time.
Especially at the time, yeah. There was a gentleman, the person that created Wonder Woman, and his wife and his girlfriend, and they all got on together, they all lived together. It was really sweet. I loved it. It's a great, really, really pride story. Thank you. The next one is The Umbrella Rebel. The story of Jonas Hanway and the bringing of the umbrella to England. And while it was unpopular when he did that, and it was seen as not manly enough and detrimental to the transport industry, Jonas stuck to it. And a big thank you from England and around the world, Jonas, because without that, we'd be still, you know, walking with wet hair in the rain. Monsieur Potato, Antoine Augustin Parmentier. The humble but much loved and needed potato. He's not the potato. He's not the potato, but he brought the potato to France, because prior to that, people were thinking that the potato was only good for animal food. And he convinced the French people to try it because they were starving. And he goes, try this awesome thing. And it eventually caught on. And it created... a health and nutrition campaign, and he was also the guy who started off the smallpox vaccination campaign, and I have a lot of respect for this guy. The next one, Capers in a Canal. The story of the Yellow Fleet making the most of a bad situation, living and working side by side, and that they had their own postal system, I absolutely loved, and that was really good for international relations. The next one for me is The Birds, The Australian Cut. The story of the time the Australian Army took on the emus and lost. Oh, gosh. Yeah, I have a few because I can't choose favourites ever. List Maniacs on Franz Liszt, who introduced us to the world's first rock star. I'll stop that again. Next one for me. Because I can't choose a favourite ever, is List Maniacs, about Franz Liszt, the composer, and the world's first rock star. Yay! He was actually pretty good looking when he was younger.
Yeah, I've got to
admit that. He was hot.
Saw some photos and just went, that is a good looking man.
That is a very good looking man. It's just when he got older, he looked a bit manky, but...
Oh, well.
I mean,
who doesn't?
Who doesn't? I'm going to probably look manky when I'm older.
Nah,
oh, thank you. Neither will you. You're awesome.
Nah, I'll be manky.
No, you won't.
I think we're going to be
okay. All right. And the last one I've got here, there are so many, but these are my top eight, gosh, is The Island That Left. When is an island not an island? When it never existed in the first place. Go and check them out, everyone.
Indeed.
Now, enjoy it.
I will go through a few of my favourites of Susie's.
Or recheck it out again.
Indeed. So I'll go. I really pushed myself to pick just a few.
You're doing better than me.
I love seriously all of them. So these are the ones that I picked.
I love yours too.
That just had something about them that stood out a little bit extra. So with regards to Susie's, first up, the other half of the Franz Liszt one is the episode Playing Around,
mm-hmm.
along with Liszt Maniacs, mm-hmm. about Maurice Flitcroft. I just loved his sheer determination in order to keep playing golf despite having the reputation of the world's worst golfer.
Yay, Maurice!
And the fact that he kept up making up the most amazing names in order to keep entering golf tournaments before somebody realized, usually once he was on there and playing, and then they'd realize who it was and basically chase him off in the equivalent of a golf cart car chase.
Complete with Benny Hill theme.
Now, the next one I picked were the Hatpin Warriors from Hatpin Warriors. Couldn't do much with that title. And wonder whose origin this is. And this is with regards to women who defended themselves from unwanted attention on mm-hmm. cable cars and the like by taking their often inch-long, 12-inch-long hat pins.
Usually between 6 and 12 inches.
That's right. And basically jabbing them into the people that were trying to harass them.
Yep.
Now, that itself is like, yes, absolutely, I completely agree with them doing that. But then they had to fight for the right to be able to defend themselves. And they didn't back down. And that's just, I think, a very inspirational story. As a little aside, I think relates, I saw an episode of BoJack Horseman.
Oh, gosh.
trust me, it actually relates, where women started carrying guns in America.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of it, one of the main characters was in front of a congressional commission saying, well, if you don't want us to carry guns, you either institute proper gun control or make sure women don't feel the need to carry them in the first place.
Exactly.
And in the show, they instantly instigated gun control.
Funny.
Because they didn't want to deal with the other half of it.
Yeah, see the
black comedy can have a point.
And the fact is that women shouldn't have had to use the hat pins in the first place. If people, and I'm not saying men do this all the time, women do it too. There is a story in that Hatpin Warriors story that I'm not sure if I put it in or not, but there was two women who were fighting over the same guy, and they were basically dueling each other, circling around each other like sharks with their massively long hatpins. So,
trying to skewer each other.
Then again, women wouldn't have to do this if people didn't keep their hands to themselves.
So I would just say that that particular episode, Hatpin Warriors and Wonder Whose Origin This Is, I still feel is probably one of our more important episodes.
Mm, exactly.
It really has got some very good messages for tolerance.
Mm, got some fantastic feedback too. And understanding. Thank you, guys.
So, yeah. Definitely, I think if you I listen to all of ours, but if you listen to one, listen to that one. And finally, after that nice little aside, Susie did mention this before, the other half of Badgering History, the Disco Inferno episode, which was about the Disco Demolition Night.
Oh, God.
Where a DJ decided to use a baseball game to celebrate the death of disco and explode a crate full of disco records.
Yeah, to say how much he hated disco. Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it just, of course, funny enough, just went completely out of control, and the pure insanity that this night descended into is just frankly amazing. So that those are just incredible stories. Yeah. So, Susie, let's move on.
Okay.
What about some of the ones that you did that you quite liked?
I absolutely, once again, I can't choose favourites. I can't whittle it down to three. I've been able to whittle things down and say, I really like this one and that one. Yeah, I don't play favourites. Okay, but my favourite ones, the first one here is Flower Power Failure, about how tulips almost sent the country of Holland broke because it was their first ever example of futures trading, and people were trading bulbs that they didn't know what they would grow into or what colour they would be, but they were banking the future on past performance. Tulip bulbs were being sold for exorbitant amounts. So go and check that one out. It's classic. And it did actually take me ages to do that one because I had to get a lot of things and do it properly because it is very, very important. And next one is playing around because I love Morris. Mm. And he just wanted to play golf and show everyone how much he loved playing this sport, even if he had to change his name every time he went into it. Even though he was the world's worst golfer, he still kept doing it.
He did.
There is a lot of things you can take from the story. Determination, guts, and just because he could.
Mm-hmm.
Bless his little heart. Okay, next one I've got here is Popapalooza. And it's a story of all the popes vying to be pope. They ended up with three, I think.
Yeah, at one stage.
At one stage, there were three popes to lead the Catholic people of the world. And, yeah, so the question is, how many popes is too many? No. That would be maybe two. Just keep the one.
Yep.
Okay, and I did quite a few pope stories. But the next one I did was, that's in my list here, is the pope who was dead wrong. And this is the story of the exhumation of a pope, and which the pope that came after him decided to, exhume him, fully bring him up out of his grave, pop him on a throne in papal robes, and put him on trial.
I love that.
Oh, God. Amazing. Okay. All right. Now, I'm going to be a little bit serious for this one because this is also one of my favorites. It's the Balls of Victims one. Now, this is the story of the relatives and friends of victims of the French Revolution and those who came close to losing their lives to the guillotine. And they danced in celebration and wore red ribbon around their necks to commemorate this. And I need to apologize for this one, guys. I was really, really sick, and so I sounded pretty crap. But as we try to keep the strict time frames to bring you our podcasts and stories, so I'm really sorry, but it remains one of my favorites nevertheless, and I found the whole thing absolutely fascinating. And the fact that some people also adopted their family trees to put a so they could go to these balls as well, that was a massive status symbol. Massive. And the way they asked people to dance and what they wore to these balls, and check it out. Again, I'm really sorry about my crappy voice in that.
You sounded fine.
No, I sounded crap in that. I had that really bad, really bad flu. But anyway, my next one is Disco Inferno. Woo. Is that what we called it? Disco? This is the one, like Trev just said, about the disco demolition. And this was such a popular podcast. I still listen to it and giggle myself stupid. But coupled with badgering history, I was in hysterics reading this and shaking my head, and what the indeed. Sheer debauchery of the baseball match that ended in all sorts of shenanigans. And the big explosion. So that's that story there. And the last one I've got here is Vengeance on a Viking, where Sigurd the Mighty was felled by Malbrigt, which was his enemy that he went into battle with. He was felled by Malbrigt's pronounced buck teeth. He decapitated Malbrigt at the battle and carried the head over his saddle, and his leg was rubbing up against it and rubbing up against teeth that had never seen a toothbrush. And ended up with the wound infected, so he was killed by somebody that he had already killed, and yay you. Oh, dear. Yes, so...
Instant karma.
They're instant karma, exactly. So they're mine. Sorry I can't choose favourites, but go and check them out if you haven't already. But, go and revisit them like I do.
Yeah, I've listened to a few of them.
I've had to get used to listening to the sound of my voice, and I know sometimes I sound really nasally and I laugh a lot, but
fine.
This is me.
Yes, indeed.
Take it or leave it. Preferably take it, because I'm awesome.
Cool. Now, a few of my favourites, and one's actually just come back to me right now.
Oh, lovely.
So I'll start with that one.
Oh, good.
And probably one of the early ones, which gave me a reputation of doing war stories for some reason. And it was Make Whiskey, Not War.
Oh, the Whiskey War.
The Whiskey War. The best war ever between Canada and the Kingdom of Denmark. Bless where their battle over a barren island in the middle of a strait consists of alternatively leaving Canadian Club whiskey and Denmark leaving their finest whiskey with signs saying that the it's been claimed by the relative country back and forth for decades.
Now that's what, if a war is going to be done, that's what it should be.
Absolutely. It's just so, such a feel-good story. For a war story. Now, another one, of course, is the one about Sandy Island from the Island of Death and the Island That Left episode, which you mentioned before.
Yes, and the Island of Death is Povelia. That was almost going to be in there. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, it's all good.
Yep.
And yeah, so this one stood out because it was about an island that never existed and it ended up getting an official obituary in a very respective science magazine, which is just beautiful. I will also refer to Playing Around in List Maniacs again for Franz Liszt, just because, like, this guy has such a rock and roll lifestyle, and it was in the 1800s.
Bless him.
You know,
rock on, Franz.
Screaming fans, people clamoring for keepsakes and swooning at his feet. And he would go on stage, and when at a time when it was considered poor form to face the audience, he turned to the audience. Not only did he turn and face the audience, but he played with such gusto that sweat would fly from his hair and his brow, and he would just drive the crowd into a frenzy. He was a pioneer, and you can still see his influence today when you go see a really good rock concert.
Yay!
And of course, I can't go past the Emu War because not only is the whole situation ridiculous, but the fact that they attempted to shoot the emus from the back of a truck using machine guns bolted to the back of a truck while it was driving over very rough terrain, and it could only reach about half the speed of the birds they were chasing. You what the?
Yeah. The visual I've got is the, oh,
it's like a Looney Tunes cartoon, honestly. So I think it's safe to say that this is a significantly longer episode than normal, so I hope you have enjoyed our indulgence, but
wow,
it's the anniversary episode. We had to do something a bit different and a bit bigger.
That's right.
This has been a,
oh, this is, this, I love so going down memory lane. I love it, and I've loved going back over my stories and Trev's stories and just going, geez, we are doing really well.
Yeah, this is...
And they're funny, and, oh, well, mostly they're funny, and they just make you laugh and just shake your head and say, what the?
Yeah.
Which is
the whole point. Yes. So we hope you have enjoyed this extended birthday edition of What the History. Definitely have a listen back to our previous episodes. If you haven't already, there's a handy little playlist on the website, wthpod.rufusproject.com, the What the History playlist that has all the episodes that you can just listen to and even binge if you want to.
Yep.
Binge. Go wild. Of course, you can subscribe to us through your favorite podcast player or on Apple Podcasts. Plenty of ways to listen to the podcast if you've only just found us. And
welcome if you have.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, if you do want to know a bit more about what we have discussed tonight, we do have references down below, limited as they are, being that this is a bit of a nibbly episode. And certainly, if you want to let us know what you think, you can leave comments on the website. You can send us an email to wthpod@rufusproject.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can find the What the History podcast page on Facebook. Find us at pod_what on Twitter, or use the hashtag WTHpod, and we should be able to track down comments that way too.
Okay, speaking of binging, Vicky, my darling sister, I hope you are still binging on our podcast. Because that's what you told me you were doing last time I saw you.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, if she gets to this one soon.
Yeah.
Then she can let us know.
She can.
Yes.
Tell her to listen. What did you whisper in my ear before?
I was trying to say that we were going to go over our favourites.
Oh. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I get you.
All good.
Now I understand.
So I think it's time to bring this extra bumpery. Well, for a nibbly, it's turned into quite a meal.
Mm. I hope you feasted.
Indeed.
Feast.
And of course, we will be back in a couple of weeks' time with a more regular episode.
Yes.
And a couple of more bits of bizarre history to make you say, What the history? Woo! About that, yay!
I think we should go and have a drink of our beverage. Oh, that's really good. It sounds like we're in pain.
I know. That was meant to be a party blower that I was just kind of trying to make with my mouth and fingers. Woo! Oh, they got a party popper. Yay!
There it is.
Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye!